Hello, and welcome to the Women's Hour. I'm Kelly Pyle, your Sun Sounds of Arizona volunteer broadcaster. Today's show features articles from the April 15th issue of People Magazine and Oprah Daily, the online newsletter. I will be sharing a variety of articles, including We Must Spread Hope, Valerie Bertinelli, I'm at the best place in my life, Why Am I Tired All the Time, and The New Etiquette of Being Sick. We must spread hope. As Earth Day 2024, on April 22nd, raises awareness of the impact of plastic on human and planetary health, People celebrates Jane Goodall and the climate warriors following in her footsteps. Not everyone gets a happy birthday message from Cher on social media or a special performance by Dave Matthews at a private party in San Francisco. But then again, not everyone is Dr. Jane Goodall. People like Jon Stewart are coming to one birthday party, she says. I can't keep up with all these people in all these places. The legendary ethologist who broke ground with her trailblazing research on chimpanzees and has dedicated her life to protecting the planet doesn't understand all the fuss about her 90th birthday on April 3rd. I don't feel any different from how I was last year at this time, she says. So I shall just carry on. I'm busier than ever. I feel that I was put on this planet with a mission. Ever since Goodall set foot in Tanzania's Gombe National Park in 1960, at age 26, to study chimpanzees in the wild, she has made it her life's work to spread the word about protecting endangered species and their natural habitats. Goodall, whose husband, Derek Bryson, died in 1980, lives 2 months each year with her sister, Judy Goodall, 86, in their childhood home in Bournemouth, England. She spends the other 300 days traveling to spread her message of hope around the world and raise awareness for the Jane Goodall Institute, the nonprofit she founded in 1977. She focuses her talks on conserving the natural world and fighting the climate crisis. We do have a window of time, but unless we get together and take action, it will be too late, she says. In February, she announced that her nonprofit had teamed up with the Bezos Earth Fund to protect forests and biodiversity in the Democratic Republic of the Congo and the Republic of the Congo, a region that is key to helping slow climate change. She'll also spend time speaking at more than 25 Jane Goodall Institute chapters worldwide that want to commemorate her birthday. I'll be celebrating for a whole year, she says. The energetic grandmother of two works so tirelessly because you could hardly say things are well in the world, can you? The climate is completely different. It rarely snows anymore on England's south coast where she grew up. We have maybe 2 nights of snow, she says. There's a little bit of frost, a caking, and a few flakes of snow. The antidote, she says, lies in giving hope to the world. If you lose hope, you become apathetic and do nothing, because what's the point, she says. If we all do nothing, we're doomed. That's why I spend a lot of time working with our Roots and Shoots program, which encourages young people in 70 countries to help humans, animals, and the environment. Roots and Shoots honestly changes young people, she says. Even at the age of about 6, they're planting organic gardens and trees and taking action. She wants adults to follow suit. The cumulative effect makes a big difference. Not surprisingly, Goodall works hard to avoid using plastics, the theme of this year's Earth Day. I try to think about everything I do in relation to, is it going to harm the environment? Was it cruel to animals? She's also looking toward the legacy she wants to leave behind, inspiring others to care for the planet as she has. We depend on the natural world for everything, she says. It's like a beautiful tapestry, and all the threads are interconnected. As each species vanishes from this ecosystem, eventually it will collapse. So we must give young people hope. By K.C. Baker, this is a People Earth Day special. We must spread hope. Valerie Bertinelli, I'm at the best place in my life. A difficult divorce led the star to start focusing on me. Then came a hot new romance. I'm madly in love. By Liz McNeil, with photographs by John Russo, this is a People magazine exclusive. It wasn't long ago that Valerie Bertinelli was thinking, I was supposed to die with 6 cats and 1 dog and very happily live the rest of my years alone. I'm good alone. But all that changed when an online friendship with an East Coast writer turned romantic. On a recent spring afternoon, at her home in the hills of Los Angeles, Bertinelli is beaming. I am in love, she says. It's still so new. I'm not ready to share his name publicly, but it is unlike any connection I've ever felt. Mature, kind, thoughtful, patient. I'm glad it's happening, but it's like, what the heck is happening? It's a seesaw of emotions. My belly is flip-flopping. This was not supposed to happen. Before Bertinelli, 63, could let love in, she had to learn to love herself. I want to be very clear that this process has taken a long time, says the TV star. She confronted her body image issues, which began when she was a teen, during her 2022 divorce from her second husband, Tom Vital, after 11 years of marriage. We became very unkind to one another, and that's not a way to live in a marriage, she says. That was just the breaking point for me, where I finally decided I've had enough. I was continuing to tolerate intolerable things, starting with my own words in my own head. That's what sent her, she says, into more consistent therapy, more journaling and meditation, and back to what truly nourished me, my love of cooking. She returned to the dishes she had long denied herself, ribeye steaks, crispy chicken thighs, and roasted tomato soup with garlic croutons. Now I think, what do I want, as opposed to what am I going to eat? Because I need to be careful about calories, says Bertinelli, as fun, feisty, and vulnerable as ever. Through cooking, I found joy again. I wanted to share my story because I have built up this amazing community online. She has 1.5 million Instagram followers, where so many people have watched me be super raw on camera and feel everything. I wanted them to know, hey, I've gotten through this part. I swear it's going to get better. It's a story she shares in recipes and intimate vignettes in her new cookbook, Indulge, which is out now. I want to remind people to indulge in their life, she says. I had pasta alla vongole last night, and I enjoyed every flipping bite of it. The cookbook was an offshoot of the emotional and mental healing that I've been doing, she says. First came the work. Why I didn't think I deserved to be loved. Why I was using food to numb my feelings. I had hit rock bottom emotionally. All the drama and trauma I hadn't dealt with. It took time and a lot of tears. The more I let myself cry, the better I felt, she says. Walks with her dog Luna were also cathartic. When I decided to really question why I was having a certain emotion, I was able to, most of the time, walk through it and get to the other side, she says. The biggest mistake I used to make is I wanted results overnight. This time, I knew I wasn't going to get emotionally or mentally or physically healthy overnight. In therapy, Bertinelli examined not only the end of her second marriage to Vitaly, but also the death of her first husband, rocker Eddie Van Halen, in 2020 at age 65 after a long battle with throat cancer. The grief is that he can't be here to see Wolfie flourish, she says of their only child, Wolfgang, 33, a Grammy-nominated songwriter and bass guitarist whose band, Mammoth WVH, is now on tour. There was so much more to explore as parents of this wonderful son. Bertinelli, who often pops up at his shows and has even made a cameo in a music video for his band, accompanied him to the Oscars last month, where he played guitar, performing on stage with Slash, Mark Ronson, and Ryan Gosling for the Barbie hit, I'm Just Ken. Every time I'm at a show with Wolfie, I just imagine holding Ed's hand saying, can you believe this is happening? It's wistful thinking, she says. I don't wish that Ed and I had gotten back together. It was wistful because of what we had but couldn't sustain. At the end of Eddie's life, we were both going through hard times in our marriages, said Bertinelli. I continued for years to rewrite the facts in my head and build them into some sort of fantasy. But now I know we were never going to get back together. We were becoming kinder souls to one another. Our bond was the unconditional love we had for our son. She wished that Eddie could have been present last October 15th when Wolfgang wed photographer and software engineer Andrea Alsop, his girlfriend of 8 years. I love what they have, says Bertinelli, their comfort, their support, their shared sense of humor. I was so happy for them, and part of me was thinking, I want that. I'd like to have that one day. Even so, she was surprised by the intensity of the connection she discovered in her new relationship. I found joy first, and then a man entered my life, she says. The couple, he's 10 years her junior, first became friendly a few years ago when he commented on one of her Instagram posts. Every few months he would DM me, she says. It was strictly platonic, but there was something about him that I connected with that felt familiar, a comfort level. He felt like a kindred spirit. When they began talking on the phone earlier this year, I was very guarded, as was he, she says. His voice had the most beautiful timbre. I was like, oh, I can't talk to this man right now because that's really sexy. We both had strong feelings, trying not to admit them. We finally said, why not? You only live once. They met for the first time in person in early March and had a romantic weekend with long walks in New York Central Park. I'm driving up to meet him, and he's already at the hotel, standing outside, she recalls. I just jump out of the car, and I run to him, and I hug him. It was the best hug. I immediately felt like I was home. This is where I belong, in this man's arms. It all feels incredibly right. The couple have since established the 3-week rule, she notes. We'll never go longer than that without seeing each other. After all, she adds, it's about finding the joy in life and sharing it. Her new guy supports her when negative thoughts come back up unexpectedly. He challenges me to stop beating myself up and to be better to myself, she says, tracing back a long history of criticism of her appearance to be a teen star on One Day at a Time. I remember watching my grandmother and Aunt Adeline make gnocchi and their joy of putting food at the dinner table. Then food became weird when I started to become an actress, she says. You're eating too much, you're eating too little, she recalls telling herself. It became an obsession. These days, she has learned to stop using the scale. The last time was at the doctor, she says. When you feel good, you look good. Doesn't matter how much you weigh. She eats without shame. One of my favorite snacks is an apple with crunchy peanut butter, she says. And because I live alone, I do it straight out of the jar. She also posts throwback bikini photos from her backyard pool. I looked beautiful. If you want to call it a thirst trap, then yeah, this 63-year-old is posting a 10-year-old thirst trap, she says with a laugh. Trust me, my ass doesn't look like that. Gravity may have taken a toll, she jokes, but nothing is weighing her down. I'm at the best place in my life, she says. It's taken me 60 years to get here. This is me. Love me or leave me. Bertinelli was just 21 when she made her first appearance on the cover of People in 1981. She had married Eddie Van Halen 7 months earlier and posed with him for the story. I was such a baby, she says. I still have those cowboy boots, and I still love them. My mom and biggest cheerleader. The one thing my mom always instilled in me is to treat people how you want to be treated. She was always very motherly. She just knew how to make everything better, no matter what was happening. She has such outward positive energy, and that's infectious. There's enough negativity in the world. It's nice to have someone out there fighting the good fight. It's funny. She comes to a lot of my shows. She's very proud. She loves to be involved in my life. It's great to have a parent that cheers you on. She's the only parent I have, so it's important to make that time count because it doesn't last forever. I wish I could have spent more time with my dad. He is the reason I do what I do, but I can't. I can spend time with my mom, and it's the best. She's the best. By Wolfgang Van Halen. You've been listening to Valerie Bertinelli, I'm at the Best Place in My Life, a People Magazine exclusive. The New Etiquette of Being Sick. A No BS Guide for the Post-COVID Era by Cassie Hurwitz, published March 29, 2024. This is from Oprah Daily. We've all been on both sides of this dilemma. You're sitting at your desk, squashed in the middle seat of a plane, or grabbing a coffee from your barista's hand, and somebody nearby lets out a hacking cough or high-velocity sneeze. Maybe it was you, or your cubicle mate, or the guy who ordered the triple espresso. If you're the one holding the tissues, are you obligated to explain yourself? I've had this for 2 weeks, I'm not contagious. If you're the bystander, are you allowed to glare? Cold and flu season just won't quit anymore. And now allergy season is here, and it all adds up to a whole lot of confusion. To clear it up, we tapped experts to break down the post-COVID etiquette of being sick. Here are answers to the most FAQs. How long am I actually contagious? It's a little unclear right now, considering the CDC just reduced its COVID isolation guidelines from a minimum of 5 days to staying home until at least 24 hours after symptoms are getting better overall. Seriously? According to Linda Yancey, MD, an infectious disease specialist at Memorial Hermann Health System in Houston, you won't really be aware that you're sick while you're in the window to infect others. The time you're most contagious with the flu, COVID, or one of the cold viruses is for the 3 days before your symptoms start, she says. By that time, you're probably going to be contagious for 5 to 7 more days. After that, your immune system has taken care of it. The flu or COVID may still make you feel like you got hit by a bus, but as a general rule, after a week from symptoms starting, you're no longer contagious, Yancey clarifies. So when do I ditch the office? According to Melissa Clark, an industrial organizational psychologist and the author of Never Not Working, the concept of continuing to work while sick is called presenteeism. And, as determined in a 2016 study, it actually accounts for more productivity loss than absenteeism, not working while sick. Basically, it'd be better for the organization for you to take the day off, Clark says. And the medical docs agree. Esther Sternberg, MD, an immunologist, research director at the Andrew Weil Center for Integrative Medicine at the University of Arizona in Tucson, and author of Well at Work, advocates for plenty of healing time at home, starting as soon as you feel symptoms. It's much better for your body, and it's kinder to the people around you. Once you're sick, you want to do what you can to help your body recover, she says. You don't want to make yourself sicker by adding stress to your already stressed body. And even if you enjoy your work, being in the office is a stressor. Pushing yourself to complete tasks or endure a presentation is going to set your immune system back, so you'll actually take longer to get better. But what does this mean in our new hybrid world when Slack and texts are on 24/7? If you're feeling a little congested or achy or nauseated, but think you can still be productive, take a remote day. But don't fall victim to flexibility. Even though you can do a work-from-home day while sick, you don't have to. There's so much pressure on trying to prove that you're a good worker by going above and beyond and sacrificing everything else, Clark says. Don't give in to the guilt. If you have a teeny cough or a whisper of a sore throat and have to go in for something important, alert the people around you and mask up, because yes, you probably are contagious. You don't have to stay home like a pariah, Yancey says, but make sure that the people you work with know you're sick. If you work with someone who has an immunocompromised condition, they can take some precautions. It should also go without saying that if you are coughing or sneezing, you should up the number of times you're washing your hands and mitigate any spray. We train kids to cough or sneeze into the elbow. My kids call it the Dracula sneeze, Yancey says. Okay, I'm definitely too sick to go in, but I feel guilty. Should I join meetings virtually? I am forever telling my patients, you are sick. You need to relax and recuperate. I give you permission to be sick, Yancey says. That's because Americans are notoriously terrible at unplugging while under the weather. Stay home, lie on the couch, watch bad daytime TV, and drink orange juice, she advises. Take the time to fully relax and let your immune system do its work. Remember, less stress equals faster recovery. Once you get past rock bottom and turn a corner, you know that day, consider a few work-from-home days. Listen to your body. It will tell you when you can start working, Sternberg says. Just take it slow. Some virtual social interaction will probably make you feel better. Studies have shown that people who have a lot of positive relationships have a lower frequency of viral infections, and they get less sick when they are sick, according to Sternberg. But it could also drain you. Give yourself time to go offline, to do micro meditations or take naps. De-stress and recharge. It can be 10 minutes, she says. I am re-entering the world. Should I tell people they don't have to worry about my lingering cough? In cold and flu season, a cough does not need to be explained, Yancey says. I think everybody understands. But if you really want to put colleagues at ease, a simple, just a tickle in my throat, or something went down the wrong pipe, is okay. It's a quick signal to others that they don't have to worry, even if it's not 100% true. What if I'm sniffling and sneezing from allergies? Unfortunately, allergy symptoms can be identical to mild cold symptoms, so telling the difference can be difficult, Yancey says. If you know that it's ragweed making you miserable, one strategy you can use is simply saying, "Don't mind me, allergies," to let people know they're not at risk. It might feel like overkill, but more often than not, you'll get an understanding smile from someone whose eyes are equally itchy. By the way, at least 81 million people in the U.S. dealt with seasonal allergies in 2021. And finally, can I work from home if I have cramps? If men had periods, everyone would get a week off, Yancey jokes. She says it depends on the severity. But remember, you should not feel guilty for resting. And that goes for any painful or chronic condition. So we say, take the day off. Cassie Hurwitz, Associate Editor. Cassie Hurwitz, she/her, is an associate editor at Oprah Daily, where she covers everything from culture to entertainment to lifestyle. She can typically be found in the middle of multiple books and TV shows all at once. Previously, Cassie worked at Parents, Rachel Ray In Season, and Reveal. Her love language is pizza, New York slices, Chicago deep dish, and otherwise. You've been listening to The New Etiquette of Being Sick from Oprah Daily. You are listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona. I'm your volunteer broadcaster, Kelly Pyle, and this is the Women's Hour. Diddy under fire. The media mogul is facing 4 sexual assault lawsuits and a Homeland Security investigation by Rachel DeSantis from People magazine. On March 28th, Sean Diddy Combs treated his 17-year-old twin daughters, Delilah and Jessie, to a night out at Topgolf in Miami Beach. as he flashed a peace sign to photographers. Combs, 54, seemed carefree, with no indication that 3 days earlier his world had been rocked by federal raids on his Los Angeles and Miami Beach homes. The raids carried out by Homeland Security agents, reportedly in connection with two pending lawsuits accusing Combs of sex trafficking, marked a dramatic crack in the armor of the media mogul's empire, which has faced a series of setbacks since he was first accused of rape, sex trafficking, and domestic violence in a lawsuit filed by his ex-girlfriend, Cassandra Ventura, in November. On March 25th, the raids on Combs' homes, an execution of search warrants, took place as the Bad Boy Entertainment founder was at a Florida airport, ready to fly with his twins to the Bahamas on vacation. Combs cooperated with Homeland Security agents and Miami-Dade police officers on the tarmac and Miami-OPA LACA Executive Airport, and was not arrested or detained during the ordeal. Meanwhile, in Holmby Hills, his sons Justin, 30, and Christian, 26, were handcuffed outside Combs' estate as they spoke with authorities, although both were released without arrest. On that same day, former Syracuse University basketball player Brendan Paul, 25, was arrested at Miami OPA LACA Executive Airport on felony cocaine and marijuana possession charges. His arrest does not appear to be connected to Combs. However, Paul was named in a February lawsuit filed by record producer Rodney Lil Rod Jones Jr. that accused him of being Combs' mule and claiming that he acquires and distributes Mr. Combs' drugs and guns. While Homeland Security Investigations says the property raids are part of an ongoing investigation, Combs' attorney Aaron Dyer called them a gross overuse of military-level force. In a statement, he added, "This unprecedented ambush leads to a premature rush to judgment of Mr. Combs and is nothing more than a witch hunt based on meritless accusations made in civil lawsuits. Mr. Combs is innocent and will continue to fight every single day to clear his name." Though Combs and Ventura, 37, reached a settlement of her $30 million suit the day after she filed, he has since faced a spate of similar ones. On November 23rd, two women filed sexual assault suits against Combs. Joy Dickerson Neal claimed he drugged and raped her in 1991, while Lisa Gardner said Combs and a friend took turns raping her and another woman in 1990 when she was 16. Weeks later, Combs spoke out for the first time after a fourth woman filed an anonymous lawsuit alleging that he and a colleague sex trafficked and gang raped her when she was 17. "I did not do any of the awful things being alleged," he said. "I will fight for my name, my family, and for the truth." In February, Jones filed the fifth lawsuit against Combs, accusing him of sexual assault and sex trafficking. The suit, which he amended the day of the raids, named Justin as a defendant, claiming he solicits prostitutes, underage girls, and sex workers, and accused Christian of drugging and sexually assaulting a woman. Nearly a week after the raids, Combs celebrated Easter with his daughter, Love, 17 months, and at press time he faced no charges. "It's a stressful situation," a source says, "but he's keeping his cool." With additional reporting by Pernilla Sedenheim, this has been Diddy Under Fire from People. 1936 to 2024. Louis Gossett Jr., a true trailblazer. The Oscar winner broke down barriers with powerful roles that changed TV and film forever, by Janine Rubenstein. This is from People magazine. Just as he approached his roles for more than 70 years, Louis Gossett Jr. was prepared, maybe even a bit excited, for his next act. "I'm not afraid to die and of going to heaven," Gossett told People in January. "I know they're having some great concerts up there. My heroes and heroines are up there. After we make that transition, I think it's going to be a great time." Gossett, who starred in the groundbreaking 1977 miniseries Roots and became the first Black person to win an Oscar for Best Supporting Actor for his role as a tough Marine drill instructor in 1982's An Officer and a Gentleman, died in Santa Monica on March 29th at age 87. According to a statement released by his family, he had been battling an undisclosed, prolonged illness. "He fought a good battle, and he showed us the way," his friend and Roots co-star Ben Vereen told People shortly after the news broke. "We must celebrate that life, not mourn that life. I'm sitting in gratitude today." Gossett not only paved the way for Black actors in Hollywood, but did so with a playfulness and gusto that belied his years. His final film was 2023's The Color Purple, released just 3 months before his death. "You left behind so many tokens for us," wrote its star, Fantasia Barrino. "You will be missed, but man, did you live a blessed life." A proud New York City native, Gossett was in high school when he stumbled into his first role after following a teacher's advice to try out for the 1953 Broadway play, Take a Giant Step. It was indeed a step in the right direction, and after enrolling at NYU, he turned down an opportunity to play basketball for the New York Knicks to accept a role in the original 1959 Broadway production of A Raisin in the Sun, opposite Sidney Poitier. "I was there one night," Roots actress Leslie Uggams recalls of catching one of Gossett's performances. "He was just incredible. He was magic." A gifted guitar player as well, Gossett once considered a career in music. But, as he said in January, acting would always take over. His big break came with Roots, though it was one role he wasn't eager to take on. "I was upset they gave me that part," he said of being cast as Fiddler, whom he deemed the Uncle Tom character in the slavery-era drama. "But in doing research, I realized there's no such thing." The series helped open America's eyes to the realities of slavery. "We had no idea how enormous it was," Gossett said. "We changed the world." Not long after, he changed the game. Gossett's role as a gunnery sergeant in An Officer and a Gentleman was written as a white man, said the film's director Taylor Hackford. But after learning that many drill sergeants were men of color, Hackford took a meeting with Gossett. "I hired him on the spot," said Hackford, noting it was a rare role in which a Black character had absolute authority over white characters. The film's star, Richard Gere, who played a rebellious Navy officer candidate, recalled that Gossett stayed in character throughout the shoot. "We were all so proud of him when he won his Oscar," Gere said, calling Gossett a sweetheart, a tough guy with a heart of gold. Gossett's family feels the same. The thrice-divorced father of two remained in great spirits, even in his final moments. He was in rare form yesterday, a cousin, actor Robert Gossett, said just after his death. His son, Sharon, and I sat with him cracking jokes. A Hollywood icon's well-deserved last laugh. With reporting by Eric Anderson, Stephanie Wenger, and Kelly Wynn, this is Louis Gossett Jr., a true trailblazer, from People. Why am I tired all the time? Hint, it's not because you aren't sleeping enough, and the fixes are a cinch. By Nora Bean, published June 28, 2023, from Oprah Daily. You got a good night's sleep, you're not sick, you ate breakfast, and you even did 30 minutes of cardio. So why do you feel like you're dragging yourself through the day in a jet-lagged haze? If you really did get enough sleep, many Americans struggle to do so, with 1 in 3 considered sleep-deprived, or getting less than 7 hours a night, then constantly feeling tired can be a sign of a serious health condition, such as chronic fatigue syndrome, Lyme disease, thyroid issues, or depression. It's also the most common symptom of menopause. If you think you might fall into one of these categories, see your doctor or a therapist in the case of depression, who can help diagnose you and guide you to a treatment that's right for you. But if you're feeling just physically and mentally and even emotionally sluggish, and you've ruled out stress or boredom, also known as the endless Zoom meeting, consider one of these surprising culprits. They're simple to remedy, and addressing them will benefit your overall health, not just your energy level. Number one, being even just a little dehydrated. Our bodies are made up of around 60% water, which is key to keeping our blood flow, brain and muscle function, metabolism, and the transportation of nutrients operating at their very best. Given how much H2O that is, you'd think we'd be totally fine if a little bit simply evaporated away. But studies have found that even a slight decrease, meaning less than 2% water loss, can impact our daily functioning and make us feel not just fatigued and less focused, but also potentially more prone to anger, anxiety, and depression. One possible explanation involves the production of the antidiuretic hormone arginine vasopressin, AVP. When you become dehydrated, your body loses water and starts to thicken, triggering your hypothalamus, the deep part of your brain that links your endocrine and nervous systems to produce more AVP, says Evan Johnson, PhD, an associate professor of kinesiology and health at the University of Wyoming. When AVP levels go up, that signals to your kidneys that it's time to reabsorb water from within your body and not expel it as urine. But here's the catch. Studies suggest that chronically higher levels of AVP may also lead to mood changes, including fatigue and depression. The fix. Make sure you're drinking enough fluids, whether water, seltzer, coffee, or tea. They all count. While the old school recommendation to drink 8 glasses a day is essentially a myth, you can use it as a lodestar, says Johnson, though don't stress about counting ounces. Rather, keep tabs on your urine color. It's the only way outside of a lab to gauge whether you're mildly dehydrated, says Johnson. Once you feel thirsty, you've passed the mild mark, he cautions. You'll know if you're well hydrated, if it's consistently in a light yellow range, and you take about 6 to 8 pee breaks a day. Number two, eating too much sugar and or processed food. If you've been feeling dips in energy during the day, it might be time to audit the sugar in your diet, including hidden sugars in savory foods. Added sugar isn't just in sweets, sodas, or energy drinks. You can find significant amounts in things like ketchup, pasta sauces, and salad dressings, says nutritional psychiatrist Uma Naido, MD, Director of Nutritional and Lifestyle Psychiatry at Massachusetts General Hospital, and author of This Is Your Brain on Food. Added sugar also lurks in the foods that start our day, from yogurts to the refined carbs we know and love, like bagels, muffins, and scones. You might feel that they give you a boost of energy, but studies suggest you're setting yourself up for a crash and burn soon after. Why? When sugar and refined carbs are metabolized, they cause a spike in insulin, which can then lead to a precipitous drop in blood sugar. For many people, that drop manifests in feelings of tiredness, acute sleepiness, and fatigue, an overall depletion in energy. In fact, a 2019 review of 31 different studies found that most subjects felt higher levels of fatigue and less alertness within 30 to 60 minutes after consuming foods high in refined carbs and sugar. That drop may also induce feelings of depression in some individuals. A small study published in the journal Appetite looked at 82 adults with diabetes and found that those who ate a meal that had a high glycemic load or one high in sugars and refined carbs also reported a significant decrease in energy and an uptick in feelings of depression afterward. So that afternoon cookie you think will perk you up may actually bring you down. Sugar may also induce these feelings because, just like lack of sleep, it triggers inflammation in the body, says Naidu. Most added sugars, such as high fructose corn syrup, and this does not include sugar in fruit, which comes with the added benefit of fiber, minerals, and vitamins, are pro-inflammatory substances, and the resulting changes in the gut and the brain may ultimately lead to feelings of depression and fatigue. The fix. Starting last year, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration began requiring that companies list added sugars on nutrition labels. Woot woot! So grab your readers and follow the recommendations of the Dietary Guidelines for Americans and keep added sugars to less than 10% of your daily caloric intake. That's a max of 50 grams of sugar for a 2,000 calorie diet. Better yet, skip packaged foods as much as you can and focus instead on nutrient-dense whole foods like whole grains and fresh fruits and vegetables. So for example, if granola, which is often high in sugar, and yogurt are your morning jam, make the latter plain with no added sugar and try adding just steel-cut oats with some blueberries and a little honey and cinnamon to sweeten it instead, suggests Naidu. And make sure not to use artificial sweeteners as a substitute. These can cause a similar sugar crash as regular sugar because the taste receptors in the tongue and in the gut still get activated. They think sugar's coming their way, says Naidu. Number three, low vitamin or mineral levels. Many people in the United States don't meet the recommended daily adequate intake of vitamins and minerals, and as a result of these inadequacies, end up experiencing covert symptoms only that are difficult to detect clinically, according to a Linus Pauling Institute report. What are some of those covert symptoms? You guessed it, fatigue and mood changes. Some key vitamins and minerals to watch out for, says Naidu, are vitamin D, the lack of which has been linked to depression and anxiety. Vitamins B1, thiamine, B6, B9, folate, and B12, all of which, when low or deficient, can make you feel tired, sluggish, or even depressed. B12 is found only in meat, fish, poultry, eggs, and dairy products. So vegans and vegetarians, even those who eat eggs and dairies, studies have found, and people with Crohn's or celiac disease who have trouble absorbing the vitamin often don't get enough. Iron, which is a particular concern for women who are still menstruating, blood loss lowers iron levels. A deficiency is linked to depression. Magnesium acts as an anti-inflammatory, which may be how it helps protect against both conditions. Vitamin C is a crucial antioxidant, especially in the brain. Fatigue is a common symptom when levels are low. The fix: eat the rainbow, red, orange, yellow, green, and blue fruits and vegetables, plus nuts, legumes, and lean proteins. If you can't eat certain foods, don't worry. Most of us have gaps in our eating. So after paying attention to those and seeing what you might be able to fill back in with food, you may need to turn to supplements, like a vitamin B complex, says Naidu. For a daily vitamin D boost, she also recommends spending 10 minutes in the sun without SPF so it can penetrate the skin. But always talk to your doctor before stocking up on supplements. They can test your levels to help you target exactly what you need and in what dosage. You've been listening to Why Am I Tired All the Time? From Oprah Daily. What you need to know about plastic in your water. In January, Phoebe Stapleton, associate professor of pharmacology and toxicology at Rutgers University, co-authored a groundbreaking study that revealed the alarming amount of tiny plastic fragments, known as nanoplastics, found in bottled water. Each liter of water contained an average of 240,000 particles from 7 different types of plastics. Nearly 90% of these particles were nanoplastics made up of synthetic chemicals with potentially dangerous health effects, such as immune dysfunction and carcinogenicity. The remainder were largely microplastics. How do these particles get into the water? Of the 3 different brands of water we examined, the particles all came from the bottle and the cap. But with 2 of the brands, the highest concentrations were in the water before it got into the bottle. We haven't done an analysis to test if it came from the source water or if it came from the filtering and processing. What happens when those particles enter the body? The body has a way to clear micro-sized particles, but the smaller nanoparticles are able to bypass those protections. For example, within 24 hours of these particles entering the gastrointestinal system, we were able to find them in maternal tissues, in animal test subjects, and in placenta and fetal tissues. What's the most troubling aspect of this study? One concerning question is, where exactly in the body are these particles going? How long do they stay there? And what are they doing while they're there. Another concern is this idea of accumulation of these particles in healthy human tissues. A study out of Hawaii has shown that tissues sampled recently had significantly higher concentrations of plastic particles in them than the tissues from just 10 years ago. So while it might not affect my health today, it may affect my health in 50 years. Are you still drinking bottled water? I'm drinking filtered tap water now. Tap water generally contains less plastic particles than bottled water, but I'm still nervous about the filters because they're made out of plastic. Plastic by the numbers. 500, the number of water bottles in billions used each year. 156, the number of water bottles the average person uses each year. 50, the percentage of plastic products that are used once and thrown away. By Johnny Dodd, this is What You Need to Know About Plastic in Your Water, part of the People Earth Day special. Thank you for joining us today for our Women's Hour. My name is Kelly Pyle. I'm your Sun Sounds of Arizona volunteer broadcaster. I hope you enjoyed the articles in our program today and make plans to join us again next week for another interesting collection of women's stories. Until then, have a great day and be sure to stay tuned to Sun Sounds of Arizona.